नमः ओम शिवपदाय कृष्ण प्रसाय उदरे श्रीमद भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवं गौरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणे श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे सो Yesterday, we were discussing from Bhagavad Gita that in the presence of a realized soul, whatever thoughts we have, it will become stronger. In other words, all the emotions inside will take a very powerful nature, and sometimes it will start coming out even. And knowing very well this, Krishna took Arjuna and put Arjuna in front of Bhishma and Drona. This was done deliberately. You will see in the next verse how it happened. So what happened there was, Arjuna asked Krishna to park the chariot. Senayor bhayor madhye ratham sthapayam achyuta. When he said that, Krishna pulled the chariot right in front of Bhishma and Drona and parked it there. Deliberately he did this. Because Krishna knew that the weakness in Arjuna was that although he was a powerful kshatriya, at this point in time his weakness has come out from inside, and Krishna wanted that to come out strongly so that Bhagavad Gita could be instructed to him. So with this in mind, Krishna brought Arjuna right in front of Bhishma and Drona. So what happened at that time was that in the presence of a realized soul, of course, here we are talking about Krishna, who is in that platform, isn't it? And all the thoughts which are positive or negative, whatever that is, those thoughts will come out very strongly outside. So Arjuna's attachment was very, very much affected by the presence of Bhishma and Drona there. Normal situations, Arjuna would not be affected like this, the way he was affected then. But in this particular instance, if you look into Bhagavad Gita, those verses, you will see that, if you look at the verse 25 in the first chapter, verse 25, you will see them. Verse 26. Got that? Tatra abashyal sthidan partha pidranatha pida mahan acharyan matulan bhratran putran pautran sakhim stadha shashuran sukhradas chaiva senayor bhayor abhi. I will read the translation. There, Arjuna could see within the midst of the armies of both parties his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his father-in-law and well-wishers all present there. Nobody's name is mentioned. All the relationships are mentioned there. Isn't it? Name is not mentioned there. But the all relationships are mentioned there. So you can see from that that Vedavyasa Maharshi's point is this. He says, use the word apashyat. Tatra apashyat, isn't it? Tatra apashyat sthidan partha. He noticed this. In other words, he did not see the persons there. He didn't see Bhishma and Drona or other names that are mentioned there. He didn't see them as individuals. What did he see? He saw them as his uncles, grandfather, and the brothers and maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends. So Arjuna's vision now is purely on the bodily level, isn't it? He's not seeing them as individuals like Bhishma, Drona, like that. He's seeing them all in relationship with the body. So when he saw things in relationship with the body, means what? He's seeing them with the vasana inside. Inside the vasanas are coming out. So the influence of the vasana on the person is like this. Everything in this world, when you look through your vasanas, you will see different. Otherwise, you will see as different objects. Isn't it? You will see them as different objects. But when you look through your vasanas, you will see them in a different way. So the vision of the world is how you see from inside, through which glass you are seeing it. Suppose you see them as individuals, Arjuna could have seen, that's Bhishma, this is Drona, or this is Kripa, and Satyaki, everybody he could have seen in that way, as individuals, by their names, isn't it? But you saw Vedavyasa is mentioning there, he saw his relations, all connections with the body, how they are related to me in different bodily level, maternal uncles, all grandfather, all these kind of things. So completely on a bodily level, Arjuna is seeing this, which means that he is seeing them through his vasanas. Isn't it? It's a vasanas inside that makes a person to look through the body, through this connection through the body. Isn't it? That is also a vasana inside. Everything what we are doing is through vasanas. That's also we shouldn't forget. That there is some vasana inside which makes us to look at particular person, a particular way. Otherwise they are individuals, isn't it? They are individuals. But this attachment inside is there. That is our vasana there. The attachment inside us. So through the attachment he is looking. And because he is looking through the attachment, he fell straight away. He fell into that weakness. This is what Krishna wanted actually. Krishna wanted Arjuna to go through this. So that when this incident happened with the... when he saw there, normally we would have seen different people as people, or individuals, isn't it? You don't have to feel this weakness inside. I have to fight a war with Bhishma or with Drona. He could have thought like that, but he didn't think like that. He saw, he is my teacher, he is my granddad. In that way, he started thinking. So when you see through vasanas, what happens is, you will like some people, some people you won't like it. You will dislike them. This is a brain problem. And in your mind, immediately analysis starts. These people have done that to me, that people have done this to me. Or this way, mind starts interpreting inside. The mind is very powerful. As soon as it gets something fed inside, it immediately goes into action. So it is this vision through vasanas is what actually creates the world for us. You see, the whole world we are seeing through vasanas, and this vision through vasanas is actually creates the world, because otherwise everything is an object in this world. Every person is an individual, isn't it? Every person is an individual. We won't be affected so much if it is seen without any vasanas. If we see everybody, people have come to this world, like I have come, you have come, everybody else has come, and we'll all finish our business and we'll go back. But when go back to wherever we have to go. But what happens here, as soon as you come here, all the vasana starts building up through attachment and through affection and attachment, everything. And we develop certain thoughts inside. And then in that process, we start judging people in that way. Ragadvesham builds up from. This is called ragam and dvesham. Somebody is a friend, you consider attachment there. Somebody is not so friendly, is an enemy or whatever it is, you feel aversion towards him. So attachment and aversion is all coming all the time, it's building up inside, in some form or the other. So that happened to Arjuna also. Tatra abashyal sthidan partha. Arjuna is seeing now with full multiplicity in the world, with a full multiplicity. Many different relationships with people. Pitran, Pitamahan, Matulan, Shoshuran, like that. Relatives and enemies, everything. He says here. So this is called in Shastram Vedabuddhi. Vedabuddhi means that when you see something through your vasanas and you start interpreting people in that way, what causes in our mind, it affects us. And we start seeing that somebody is a friend and somebody... Actually, nobody is your friend and nobody is your enemy either. But where from this originated, that he is my friend, he is my enemy? We always say like that, oh, he's a good friend of mine, we'll say to people, isn't it? And somebody else, we will say, oh, I can't get along with him. I don't like him. Somebody says, I hate him. People say like that even. When you say this, when you hear that, immediately you can see he's swinging through his vasanas. Actually, nobody's your friend and nobody's your enemy. Isn't it? We all come to this world on our own and we'll be going. Before we came, we didn't know each other even. And suddenly, over a period of time, somebody has become your such a strong friend and such a strong enemy. And we didn't come together same time. We don't leave also this world same time. In between some time, there is some relationships and connections. But in that short time, all this friendship and enmity is developed. Isn't it? So that is what it says here. This is called Veda Buddhi. Veda Buddhi means this, that you have lost your spiritual platform, the relationships, and you have come to completely on a bodily level, you are analyzing things. Otherwise, normally if you see a person, in, as an individual, who is not very connected with you, without any vasanas, that won't cause any problem, it won't affect us. We see so many people on the street every day. It doesn't bother us. They come and they go. We don't know them. They don't know us. So we don't see. But as soon as you look at them through vasanas, through connection, some way relate with them, then this kind of things happen. When you see them through ragam and dvesham, it will affect us in the positive or negative way. Positive or negative. If you see from attachment, that is, it will develop into ragam, which is will be a positive thing. And if you look at them in hate or in an opposite way, relationship, then it will develop a negative thought inside. Both are wrong. One way you feel attached to somebody, that will develop into a positive thought that, oh, I'm his friend or he's my friend, like that, in one way. On the other side, a negative thought will develop inside. He is my enemy. In that way it will happen. So what happened to Arjuna? Arjuna's situation was, he lost his strength. The Gandiva fell off from his hand, body also felt very weak. And where did this disturbance happen? In the intelligence. In his intelligence it has happened. A unsettled condition inside. So, normally Arjuna is a very powerful personality, Kshatriya. He never had any fear any time. But at this point in time, Arjuna felt very, very weak. Arjuna felt very weak. What to say? At that point, Krishna also called him Klaibya. Klaibyam asmagavapartha naivato yubabadhyade kshudram hrade dorbalyam tekto chishta parandava. You will see one verse here. So, such a courageous and bold person, Arjuna, felt the weakness. And Arjuna felt the weakness and completely felt helpless about the situation. Arjuna's weakness is coming out. You can see here, Duryodhana did not shake him. Duryodhana's presence did not shake him. Dushasana's presence did not shake him. Or the relatives did not shake him, but his own mind has shaken him. Isn't it? Bhishma and Drona hasn't done anything to him yet. They have not spoken one word to him. Nor Duryodhana, Dushasana. Nobody has created any effect on him. His own mind interpreted these things through attachment and aversion, and the mind itself pulled him down at that point. If our mind don't get weak, nobody can make us weak either in this world. Yes, so long as the mind is not weakened but from inside, we won't feel that weakness also. The mind is the main thing that creates this situation inside, that weakens us. When you feel sometimes in this world also, while dealing with the world outside, sometimes from inside the weakness starts coming up, not from outside. Outside nothing may have happened, but inside you have thought about it, something, some consequences of something, and you started worrying about it, and the thought becomes so strong, you feel very weak about it. Isn't unable to do anything. So it was in that situation, Arjuna was weakened also by his mind. So Arjuna sat in front of Krishna and started crying. And it is then that Arjuna came to this situation, Shishyasteham Shadimam Tvam Prapannam, that I am surrendering unto you. I am your disciple. So to bring Arjuna to this point, Krishna has done this, to bring him to this understanding, that unless Arjuna surrenders, it's not going to happen. So you can see from that madness it started. From there the madness started. He started, in the beginning, he started instructing Krishna what to do and what is right and what's wrong. We also, when we are a little bit crazy, when we go to the doctor, we will tell the doctor all what's going wrong with us. And if he's a good doctor, he will listen to everything, all our madness, what's going on. So the whole first chapter, Arjuna is instructing Krishna what's right, what's wrong, how one should act, how one should not act. And Krishna didn't say one word, isn't it? He didn't say one word. So normally when our mind talks, the spiritual master wouldn't say anything. He's not supposed to say anything. But when the spiritual master starts talking, there will be a complete silencing inside. So in the first chapter, what you are seeing is the mind is speaking. Arjuna's mind is speaking. In the second chapter, as soon as that is over, the Atma or the spiritual master starts speaking. When you say Atma, means Atma and spiritual master is not different. If you remember that in the Bhagavadam, Krishna has spoken this very clearly. Atmano guru atmaiva purushasya visheshada pratyakshan anumanabhyam shreyasam anivindade. He said this to Uddhava, that Atmano guru atmaiva, the soul inside itself is our guru. The soul inside is the guru. So, we are also in the same way, that the whatever we are saying with our mind at that point is not based on any proper understanding of the situation. And generally, if we start praying to Krishna, that is the, when we are speaking and Krishna is listening, that's our prayers. That's our prayers. When we start speaking something and Krishna is listening, and that's our prayers. But when Krishna starts speaking and we start listening, that is meditation. That is meditation. We are saying Krishna is listening. When Krishna starts speaking, then we won't be able to say anything. When I say Krishna starts speaking, it means from inside, the soul who is present inside, when he starts speaking, then we won't be able to say anything. When the mind speaks, we are speaking. When the soul speaks, Krishna is speaking. That's the difference. Because we have not understood the soul, we are thinking all the time we are the mind. We have no idea in us that there is a thing called soul inside. Every time anything happens in life, immediately the mind jumps into action. And with the mental platform, we start working out things. And then everything goes wrong and then we get confused about it. But the point here now, in Bhagavad Gita, what's happening between Arjuna and Krishna is, Krishna is present outside as the spiritual master, no doubt. But what Krishna is doing is drawing Arjuna's attention inwards. Because Krishna is present inside also talking to him as the super soul who is present inside. So this situation is all the time happens to everybody in life also. That what we speak is called chitavritti. Chitavritti means it's coming from the mind. All crazy things, what is going through our head. That's what is coming through. And that is called chapalada. Chapalada means it's always give a very disturbed state. It's coming out. Because, why is it coming out like this? Because there is disturbances inside. Inside there is disturbances. So, till that becomes peaceful, Krishna won't start speaking. In other words, soul won't come into action. We can see in our own practical life, when mind is very disturbed, then you can't think properly, isn't it? You can't understand things properly. You can't see anything properly. But somehow or the other, if mind becomes pacified, and if you are peaceful, from inside some solutions will come out. That is when the soul speaks. Krishna speaks from inside. That, then in other words, in silence, Krishna speaks. In silence, Krishna speaks. Not with the mouth, but without saying anything, the understanding will come to us. From the soul. So, therefore, all the Mahatmas, they will tell you to be seated peacefully. First thing, to be peaceful about things, without any chitta vritti inside. No vritti going on inside. That's important thing. without any sankalpam, be peaceful within inside. And Krishna didn't say like that to Arjuna. He says to him that Arjuna was situated in the chariot, and his mind was going in all directions because of the impact from seeing Bhishma, Drona and all that. Krishna left some time for Arjuna to settle down, so that the thoughts become a little bit subdued. And when the mind becomes subdued in that way, then only Alpano Guru Alpmaiva Purushaste Visheshada. That's an important verse in the Ekadasha Skandam. Alpmano Guru Alpmaiva Purushaste Visheshada Pratyakshana Anumanabhyam Shreyasam Anuvindade. Which means that Alpmano Guru Alpmaiva. Inside Guru, the spiritual master is one's own soul, will come. And Purushasya Visheshada, that he has some special qualities. What is that? Pratyakshan Anumanabhyam Shreyasam Anuvindade. He will reveal to you the proper understanding directly and through logical conclusions. Pratyaksham and Anumanam. In either way, somehow or the other, truth will be brought in front of you. That Guru outside, all what he does is, he pushes the external looking mind to keep quiet and change our attention inwardly. That's what the Guru's duty is. That the mind which has gone out so many whole lifetime looking for solutions in the world outside, that mind comes to a dead stop. And the attention in us, the Shraddha, goes inwards looking for the connection with the soul. In which case, what will happen? That in the first chapter, Arjuna says, Arjuna's situation was that he looked around and saw all these Bhishma, Drona and others standing there. And after seeing them, the mind started shaking. Mind started getting vibrations inside. But Krishna left it for some time and the vibration stopped. And Krishna from outside started slowly pushing Arjuna inwards, to look inwards. And it is then the instruction started from Krishna. Because Krishna is present here now, it's a little different situation. In our dealings in this world, Krishna is not present there directly to tell us anything. But Arjuna's case, Krishna was present there, fortunately to tell him straight away. In our case, when the mind is disturbed, we should give time for the mind to settle down first. The mind settles down, and if we given peace inside, immediately the soul will start directing us in the proper way. That is the duty of the spiritual master. Spiritual master's responsibility is to keep this mind, not allow the mind to come in between and start controlling our life. So separating the mind and the soul between Krishna and the mind, that becomes our constant duty. This is spiritual life. Spiritual life is always looking at the mind and not allowing the mind to take over, but always keeping the mind separately. And every time when we are inside peaceful, there is no chitta-vritti, at that time the soul will speak to us properly. Krishna is present there inside every one of us. So, here Krishna has taken this approach that shravanam. Out of all the senses what we have, the most powerful one is the ears. Ears are the most powerful senses. Why? It is the most subtle one. Most subtle of all is the ears. Why do we say it's the most subtle? Because the sound and hearing is the quality of the sky. It's the quality of the sky. Now, among the five material elements, the most subtle one is the sky. So that is the reason. Because sky is the most subtle, sky's quality is this sound. Sky's tanmatra is it called. Sky's quality is the sound. Because sky is the most subtle of all the five elements, because you see, you know, from sky came out the Bhumi apanalo vayu kham, and then vayu, then analana agni, and then water, and then the earth. So in that order it came down. So out of these five, the most subtle one is the sky, isn't it? And earth is the most gross one. So earth, water, fire, air and ether. So in that sequence, if you look at it, ether or the sky is the most subtle one. And the quality of that sky is the sound. And because the sound, that is the reason why sound is the most subtle for us. You see, why sound is, we say, most subtle. And because the sound is the most subtle, to approach in spiritual life also, because the spiritual life is a subtle life, to understand this power of the sound has to be developed more than any other senses. Many other senses. And in the human body, this sushpam, most subtle, is this shravanam thing, hearing process. Everything else is grosser, much more gross than the hearing process. For example, smelling. Smelling is one of the most gross things, isn't it? One of the most gross things, to smell something. And this quality is most powerful among the animals, like a dog, isn't it? It's the most powerful thing in a dog. But we worship dog, thinking that it is most subtle thing. But it's the most gross thing, what the dog has got, isn't it? So the gross quality of the smell. Why smelling means? Smelling means matter comes in there, isn't it? Smelling means matter. Matter only you can smell. It's from the matter the smell is coming out. So where it is more gross, it becomes the smelling is a quality of that. The dog, you can see, it's a very powerful thing. It keeps on walking around smelling. And it comes to the human body, it's the least powerful thing. So, and subtler than that is tasting. Subtler than smelling is tasting. And subtler than that is seeing. And subtler than that is touching. So this is that way it works, the different senses. And shravanam is the most subtle, or hearing is the most subtle thing. And shravanam is the most, deep level spiritual sadhana. The deepest sadhana in spiritual life is shravanam. And this is why we say when we chant the holy name, we should hear. For this reason only. That most powerful adhyatma sadhana, or most powerful spiritual sadhana, is shravanam. So if we continuously hear Krishna's and Rama's name all the time in our ears, that will have a deeper impact on us than even seeing a deity eating prasadam or even doing anything else, any other spiritual sadhana. The holy name's power, we have to recognize this. The power of the holy name is in hearing this, what is being chanted. Because shravanam is the most subtle thing, prasadam and all will purify us. But prasadam can get a sick also if you eat too much, isn't it? But if you chant holy name a lot, you won't get sick, would you? You will never get sick by chanting the holy name. But you can get sick if you eat a lot of prasadam. Why? It's a grosser thing than the hearing process. So the power of the holy name, you can't minimize it. No matter, people think that, oh, it's just chanting the holy name. How long can I chant like this? What will happen? I chant. With struggle, you chant 16 rounds and finish it up. This is not good. The more we chant the holy name, holy name works from inside. Because it is a shravanam process. Process the most subtle thing in life. Therefore, for self-realization, there is no other process except hearing. This is the conclusion of the Vedanta philosophy. Vedanta philosophy gives importance to Shravanam in a different way. Not by chanting the holy name alone, by hearing about the truth. That's where Vedantis gives importance to. They say continuously hearing about the truth. Continuously hearing about the truth means what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Ekadasha Skandam. Constantly hearing that, it will bring that power inside. The purification will happen very on a much deeper, subtle level, and that will generate the proper thoughts inside. In other words, soul will start speaking properly in the right direction. If you look at Bhagavatam, you will see this. In the very beginning itself, Vedavyasa Maharshi said this in the Bhagavatam. Dharma projita kaidavotra paramo. The words, famous words. Dharmatsaranam satam vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. The first two lines. This is the second verse in the Bhagavatam. ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതെ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാപരൈ ഈശ്വര സദ്യോഹൃദ് അവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ത കൃതിബി ശുശ്രൂഷുബി തൽക്ഷണാത്. ദാറ്റ് ഇസ് എ വേർഡ്. ദാറ്റ് മീൻസ് സദ്യോഹൃദ് അവരുദ്ധ്യേത്ര കൃതിബി. As soon as you start hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, what will happen? Sadyohrid avirudhyade etra kradavi. The word used is avirudhyade. Avirudhyade means Krishna comes and occupies inside. Avirudhyade etra kradavi shushroshubhi talshanad. Shushroshubhi talshanad. Then the moment you hear about this, Krishna manifests inside. As soon as you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna manifests inside a person. What we have to remember here is, if Krishna is somebody who has to come from outside, it will not happen straight away. Why does it happen immediately? Because he is already present inside. Only thing is, he wakes up. When he hears Bhagavatam, immediately he wakes up inside. He is already present there. It's not something you have to do after that. As soon as the sound comes in, he wakes up inside. Krishna wakes up inside. Krishna is not something which you have to achieve or acquire from outside. He's already there inside. So, labdham. Labdhva sudurlabham. Labdham means it's already there. It's not something you have to bring from outside. Most of our misunderstanding in spiritual life is like this. We are thinking that I will do so many years sadhana and one day I will see him outside. This is how our mind goes in that direction, isn't it? Because we never experienced his presence inside. This is why we are seeing it outside all the time. We are only, because we give importance to the eye rather than the ear. Those who are given importance to the ear, they will know this, that it is inside the thing, not outside. In the Bhagavatam, it's very beautifully presented. How? Sri Narada Maharshi, after leaving home, when his mother died, he walked through the forest, isn't it? Eventually, he settled down near a river, drank the water, and sat there. And started he thinking about everything what the sages have spoken to him. Remember that the beautiful verses in the 5th chapter. And Sri Narada Maharshi sat down and was thinking about Krishna. And when the thoughts came up, Krishna manifested inside first, not outside. Not outside. His eyes were closed in thinking about Krishna. His eyes were closed. So Krishna first manifested inside, not outside. First manifested inside. And when he opened his eyes, he saw Krishna standing outside. That is the first meeting of Sri Narada Maharshi and Krishna. And then Krishna says to Narada Maharshi that you won't see me like this anymore in this lifetime. You have to carry on with your life. And in the next life, you will become a different person. He has not become Narada Maharshi yet. He was the son of that servant maid at that time, engaged in service. And he left home after mother's death. So all that things happen. So, important thing to remember here is, Sadyohrid avirudhyadetra kridibi shushrushubi talchanal. As soon as this shushrushubi talchanal, that means, automatically, from inside, Krishna wakes up when the sound comes in. When we are listening about Krishna, immediately from inside, Krishna comes up. And it's already there. Just like if you have a chain, golden chain lying on your neck, and it is on your neck, and you go to the police and give a complaint to the police, I lost my chain. Police will look at your neck and, is this a chain you are talking about? If the police tells you, how will you feel about that? It's the same thing with Krishna's presence also. That we are looking for the object which is already inside us. Isn't it? The object is already inside us and we are looking for him elsewhere. Therefore, the spiritual master also doesn't bring anybody from outside. He's not doing anything except this one thing. Nothing new he does. He's not taking away anything. He doesn't bring anything inside. He doesn't bring anything inside. He's not taking away anything from inside. What he's doing is that the experience what we have inside us, that I am, that consciousness, which is our true identity, and what's available to us already, that's the only thing what we have now with us, isn't it? As a presence of Krishna in us is this understand consciousness all the time. I am existing. Ahamasmi, ahamasmi. This is a proof that Krishna is existing inside. Because this is an aspect of Krishna. Isn't it? This is an aspect of Krishna. What is that aspect? Sat aspect. Sat aspect of Krishna is this, that I am existing. And I never feel, you can never say any time that I am not existing. Isn't it? Even if this body is cut off, I am existing. We have discussed this many times before. That I am always existing. That is difficult to take away from me. That understanding. For all of us, it's the same. Isn't it? So, Krishna is doing is that nothing he takes it away, and what is already within us, he wakes this up, that my real identity as what I am, and making us conscious of that, that is what the spiritual master does. In other words, he shifts our attention from the body and the world outside towards the soul, to focus towards the soul. He is not bringing in from outside, and within all the chittavritti inside, he is still there. Paramarthavastu. Paramarthavastu means the actual real substance is inside us. And he shows that to us. In the Krishna Karanamritam, there is a words like this. Anganam, anganam, andare madhavam. Madhavam, madhavam, andare nangana. Ittamagalpide mandale madhyaga sanjago venuna devagi nandana. In the Rasa dance, Krishna and the gopis were dancing. How did they dance? If you look at the photograph, sometimes you will see in a circle, two gopis and Krishna in between. Between two gopis, Krishna was present, isn't it? So, a whole circle of gopis, and among between each gopi, there was one Krishna. So, similarly, the chittavritti inside is also like us. One thought comes, and before the next thought comes, Krishna comes. Krishna comes. We don't notice these things. In the Bhagavatam, it is specifically mentioned to take note of this factor. That just like between two gopis, Krishna appears. Similarly, between two chittavritti also, between two thoughts, one thought comes, it leaves, and before the next thought comes, Krishna appears. Why? Because there is a purnada at that moment. Purnada means perfection. Between two thoughts, what we experience inside is a kind of a peacefulness or a certain amount of perfection inside. Purnada means perfection. That every chittavritti is imperfect. A chittavritti is nothing but apurnada. Apurnada means, that means there is, why did first of all a thought develop inside? Because there is some desire inside. Either some desire or fulfillment of something or not being fulfilled. Unfulfillment, you can call it that way. Something is not fulfilled. That is why a thought develops straight away inside the mind. Yeah. So, similarly, when one thought develops and that thought desire is fulfilled, then there is a peace inside. I'll give you an example. Say I am thirsty, a thought developed inside. Immediately I bring, somebody gives me a glass of water, I drank the water. As soon as I finish the water, a satisfaction comes from inside. Why? Where is that satisfaction coming from? Because that chittavritti has finished, and the next chittavritti hasn't come yet. In between that, that satisfaction is purnada. That is our perfect state of the presence, Krishna's presence there. That satisfaction what you have felt, you have finished one job in the office. The next contract, you have not taken it up yet. So you are thinking in your mind a satisfaction there. That is Krishna. That satisfaction what you are experiencing. In daily life also, it's all the time happening. Krishna is revealing to us every moment. Finishing one, why did we have to do the first thought first? Because there was an imperfection there. That work was not completed. Your desire was there to complete that work. So therefore, the first chittavritti was there. When the work was completed, the chittavritti related to that particular work stopped. Before the next work you started taking it up, in between there is a certain peaceful state within ourselves. Isn't it? We all peace, feel a certain peacefulness. So that peacefulness is Krishna. That is Krishna's presence in us. So these are in a subtle level, Krishna's presence inside us is being shown to us. So, so actually, from the Jnani's point of view, or Vedanti's point of view, every chittavritti is a beggar. He's considered to be a beggar. Beggar doesn't mean that you go and beg with a begging bowl outside. Beggar means desire has come up inside. That itself is a beggar's nature. Because only if you have a desire, you will beg, isn't it? You go for it, to get it. So that is not a very stable state inside. It's an undesirable state. So this begging nature is nothing but a chittavritti inside. Whatever wealth we have outside, inside we are holding the begging bowl, so long as we have desires. So that is why you will see in the Bhagavatam, Vairagyam is given a lot of importance, isn't it? Whenever things are spoken about spiritual life, Vairagyam is spoken. Yatra jnana viraga bhakti sahidam, it says. Jnanam goes along with Vairagyam. In other words, if there is proper jnanam, Vairagyam will be there. If there is no knowledge, there won't be any Vairagyam. Continuous chittavritti means beggar. Constantly desiring this, desiring that, and then he has to fulfill that. So he will be constantly working to fulfill all his thoughts inside. So one is wandering around in this world with a begging bowl. That is the conclusion from that. Chittavritti means thought waves. The waves, thought waves. Yeah. This chittavritti is nothing but a begging bowl. Chittavritti itself is a begging bowl. And it has been going for a very, very long time. Not today. From time immemorial, this has been going on. Not allowing us to be situated in our proper state. Proper state is not to beg. Why do we have to beg? Proper state to be situated within the identity of the soul. And there is no chittavritti. This is why we were discussing yesterday. The mind means chittavritti. Chittavritti means beggar. Beggar means no peace inside, isn't it? So peace of mind doesn't exist. A such thing of peace of mind doesn't exist. Immediately the moment mind comes into action, immediately you can take it that there is no peace inside. So from the Shastra point of view, mind is one of the worst enemies for us. Whereas in our normal life, we depend on the mind so much, thinking that the mind is the solution to the problems, or how can I be a little peaceful in my mind, we say. Isn't it? When somebody gives you a lot of disturbances, family life or office life or anywhere, you think, oh, why don't you let me be peaceful within my... Why don't you allow me to be peaceful or something like that. We'll make a remark like this, isn't it? So where's this coming from? Because we are still identifying with the mind, thinking that mind will become peaceful. Mind will never become peaceful. Mind will means constantly it will generate new thoughts. Vasishtha says to Ramachandra about this, Rama, with the even if you carry a begging bowl and no ordinary begging bowl and wander into a street of chandalas. Chandalas means who are dog eaters. Even if you go to their street where they live with a begging bowl and begging for food from them, which is considered to be a very lowest thing to do, even if you do that, doesn't matter, he says. But this begging bowl inside, you should break it first. The begging bowl inside, you should smash it down. Because so long as this begging bowl inside, it is a much bigger bowl than the bowl outside. The bowl outside has got physical dimensions and it's got a limited capacity. But this bowl inside is too big to fulfill. It expands all the time. It expands all the time. So, constant desiring, in other words. Constant desiring in words. And that takes away the shanti or peace inside. That takes away the peace inside. What is peace actually? Peace is our spiritual nature. That is the peace. The shanti is actually swarupam. Shanti, swarupam means a soul. Soul is our peaceful existence. So when we are in the spiritual nature or spiritual identity, this desire will go from inside. And our true nature is peace itself. That's why I said here that why we are not experiencing that is Anganam Anganam Andare Madhavam. Between two chittavritti, between two gopis, Krishna appears and disappears also. Similarly, between two chittavritti, Krishna appears and disappears. Krishna appears and disappears. Purna Vastu. Purna Vastu is Krishna, the complete thing. in the middle of two thoughts, it disappears. Two thought waves, it disappears temporarily. The purpose of the spiritual master is to make us aware of the presence of this Purna Vastu or complete thing between the two thoughts, between the two thoughts. Krishna also did exactly the same with Arjuna. Krishna is making Arjuna to realize that completeness of that Purna Vastu or completeness of that Vastu inside, which means making Arjuna to realize his true identity. That's what it is. That by talking about the soul, what Krishna has done to Arjuna was, in the middle of all his madness of thoughts that was coming through one after the other, in the middle of that, Krishna was pushing forward his true identity as the soul, to come to that understanding of the soul. That's what Krishna has done with Arjuna. And that complete Vastu, Purna Vastu, Krishna did not bring from outside and made Arjuna to accept that it is right within him, very much within him. That is how Krishna presented about the soul, if you look at it, isn't it? Krishna didn't tell him that you go to this place, that place, look for him there or there, here or there. Nothing was spoken. In between the thought waves, which was developing, this madness was coming from Arjuna. Right in the middle of that, Krishna spoke about the presence of the soul, and Arjuna was made to recognize that the soul is very much inside. All the verses, if you look what Krishna has spoken to Arjuna, you will not see anywhere Krishna is telling him to go, Arjuna, go and find out somewhere else. It's right inside. You are that, he says to him. You are that thing, that soul inside that. So, Purna Vastu, or complete perfection, that substance is right inside us. Complete, that Vastu is already there. It's not something that has to come from outside. It's not to come from outside. But it's been covered with all kinds of thoughts. The more the chitavritti inside, the substance is covered very much, isn't it? When the chitavritti stops, the substance comes out in its true form. Our mind becomes very active when we engage in material activities. And that is the result why we are not experiencing any spiritual happiness. Because of constant excitement, engagement in material life, we don't experience anything spiritual. And then we are asking, where is spirituality? Where is spiritual life? Where is Krishna? We say. And then somebody says, oh, he's in Vrindavan, he's in Mayapur, everywhere else you go, running around looking for him. And when you go there, you find more chitavritti starts developing there. And then you come back, oh, I finished my parikrama, I'm back now. And again, back into square one. Nothing has changed, isn't it? Why is that happening? Because where you have to inquire for him, you didn't inquire. Where we have to look for him, we didn't look for him. In Bhagavad Gita, there is no reference anywhere that you have to go somewhere else looking for Krishna. Can you show us anywhere where Bhagavad Gita tells that you should go leave this where you are now and look somewhere else for him? No, Krishna doesn't say that. Krishna's first injection of the knowledge to Bhagavad Arjuna is, he is right there inside and you are that thing inside what you are. He is also Krishna's part and parcel inside, whichever way you want to refer to that. But Atma, the soul inside, is Krishna. That is the important thing mentioned here. Generally, in the Vedantis put it in a different way. They get this point across to the person with various ways. They want to get it to the point. Because otherwise, if your Vyavasaya Atmiya Buddhi is this, that to come to this understanding somehow, what way, how you do it is immaterial. But you have to get to the point that Krishna is inside, I'm looking at the wrong place for Krishna. Krishna is very much inside. So what they do, they give examples in the material life also to convince this point to the people. When we have this Ganesh Chaturthi, you know this festival, that time for Ganesh a special preparation is offered. They call it in Sanskrit Modagam. Modagam is, it's known in different names, but it's offered, I've seen offered in every place in the country, with the same thing prepared, little differences. And it has got a speciality with this particular preparation. What it is outside it is flour. Inside it is this jaggery. And sometimes some people add coconut to it and things like that. Inside is very sweet and tasty. Outside is flour, covered with flour. And the flour has got the salty taste also. So generally, this is only prepared at the Ganesh Chaturthi time, when this offering is made to Ganesh. So in that, after the offering is made, when you distribute, the children will take it. And what they do, they'll throw away the outside portion, which is salty. And they only take the sweet, which is inside. When you talk about the water comes in the mouth. the sweet part of it, they take it. The salty part of it, they throw away without anyone noticing it, because somebody may question them, why are you throwing your prasadam out? So they're fearful, but they only want to enjoy the sweetness inside. The salty part, without anyone noticing, they'll throw it away. So the same way, because the salty part is flour mixed with salt and water, and it is boiled also. So the inside part is sweet, there is coconut, there is jaggery, and it is tasty, much more tasty than the outside. So the children eat that. But the older people, grown-ups, they won't throw away everything. They will eat the whole thing. Because it's prasadam, they'll eat the whole thing. And there is some taste when you mix this salty part outside and the sweet part inside. If you mix it and eat it, also there is some some taste in that. So the jnanis and the children are similar. Jnanis also see only the sweet part. Children also wants only the sweet. It's only those who have no realizations, they eat the whole thing. They eat the whole thing. Why is it said like that? Is jnanis only see the soul inside. Soul is that sweet part inside us, inside our body. The sweet part of the modagam is that soul inside. All the other thing, the salty and the flower, is all this mind, intelligence, body and everything else outside. Jnanis only sees the soul. They don't see the body, they don't see the mind, they don't see the intelligence. Because that is all the salty side of it. They don't have any taste for it. They don't have any taste for it. Like children. They don't have any taste for it. They only have got the taste for the soul inside. And we? We have got only the taste for the salty part of it. No taste for the sweet inside. This is the difference between the jnani and us. That so, strange enough, why this example is selected? There's a reason behind it. It's not without any reason, all these things. This thing inside this, which is this jaggery and the sweet part inside this preparation, its name in Sanskrit is called a Purnam. Purnam is the name of that. Where did this name come from, Purnam? Purnam is a name from the Upanishads. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnal Purnam Udachyade Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamayamavashishade. Similarly, you will see this word Purnam in Upanishads everywhere. And somehow or the other, that name has come to this thing inside. It's generally referred to as Purnam, this thing inside, which is the sweet part. So, it's a Upanishad's statement given to us in a form like this. And you take the Purnam from that. So, Jnanis also does exactly same thing. The Purnam is already inside us. We don't have to look for it. If we become conscious of this Purnada inside, or Purnatvam, or that substance which is inside, which is Purnam, then we have got it. There is no imperfection in that spirit soul. What is that? I am existing. That experience all the time. And unfortunately, when you are experiencing Purnam, you are in happy state of mind. Happy state of existence, in other words. Happy state of existence. Just like the flower is kept on the Purnam, in the same way, mind, intelligence, and false ego, everything is on top of that Purnam inside, on the substance inside. And then, what we are tasting that soul inside, How do we do it? Through the body, through the mind, through the intelligence, and through the senses. It is that purnata that at the moment, whatever we are experiencing in this world, through mind, intelligence, senses, and all other things, and the body, when we are experiencing these things, what we are experiencing, what we are enjoying it is that substance inside, purnatam. That purnam thing, the soul inside, it is only because of his presence inside that you are able to experience anything in this world, isn't it? Senses are functioning because of his presence inside. Mind is functioning because of his presence. Intelligence is functioning because of his presence. And even the false ego gets satisfied because of his presence. If he's not there, false ego is not there either. Isn't it? Because of only his presence, all these things have come about. So what it means is that it is his presence that you are experiencing in this world in different forms, happiness or distress, whatever it is. So that purnam you are already enjoying in this world, but enjoying through body, mind, intelligence, senses, things like that. Yeah. And important also, another thing to remember is that body, mind, intelligence, you cannot make it purnam, like the soul inside. You can't make that as a purnam. However hard you try, you can't make the body perfect, can you? That many people have this misunderstanding also, that spiritual life means to make your mind perfect, intelligence perfect, and particularly the mind. They say that performing all our adhyatma sadhana, we are trying to make the mind perfect. But there is no such thing. Mind will never become perfect. Mind will never become perfect. Why? The mind has come from imperfection. The original, the beginning. It is because mind is a thing which is a kind of a perplexion, or whatever we call it, a kind of a illusion that we have created within ourselves. It is born like that. It is born with nature. So mind will never become perfect. And body, as you know, will never become perfect. That doesn't require any proof. We know it very well. Body is never going to be perfect, no matter whatever you do. So that is the reason why we say don't give too much importance to the body. This is from the Vedanta point of view. They don't encourage this too much, to go after the body and trying to make it perfect. From devotees, we say we have to look after the body so that we can do service, and sometimes it goes to excess in that direction, or making the body for devotional service, and it becomes only business, making the body perfect for becoming devotional service. The body has its own limitations. It's better to recognize it straight away rather than trying to control the body and make it perfect. We have to do things. When you get sick, you have to treat the body. But that doesn't mean that all the time, every year, I should have rejuvenation treatment for 41 days and another 41 days rest after that, so that I can do the rest of the year, do something. A lot of people are like that. They have, when you have a lot of money and you don't know what to do with the money, then you go in this direction. Then make the body comfortable as best as you can. Go to the best resort, and the best messaging and best facilities you utilize. But Vedanta point of view is, this is all foolishness, because we are not the body, first thing. Falsely I have identified with the body, and then I'm increasing my attachment to the body by engaging in this way. You have no time to think about the soul or spiritual identity. Deliberately increasing the bodily identification within ourselves. So the more we disconnect with the body, it helps us to understand what Krishna is talking about. Otherwise, it's very difficult to be absorbed in the body and to absorb Bhagavad Gita. It's very hard to understand Bhagavad Gita fully absorbed in the body. It all is something in the air we are talking about. No connection with the reality, isn't it? It's an experience. Anybody can understand that. That when we discuss Bhagavad Gita, if you are completely absorbed in the body, it'll be very difficult to follow anything what Krishna is saying. Is such a ignorant state of existence. So, purnada is there. It doesn't have to be brought from outside. It is inside. Only thing is, we have forgotten that. That connection is gone. Shraddha. In other words, our attention has moved away from the soul to the body, mind, intelligence, and things like that. For spiritual life, sadhana, and meditation and these, they are not the important thing for spiritual life. Because attention is more important than sadhana. If your attention is in the body all the time, and if you are doing a lot of sadhana, what will happen? It won't have any benefit, work. It won't work. That's why it is said that Shraddha is more important than sadhana or meditation. Your so-called japam and everything comes later. If your attention is in the body all the time and you are executing a lot of, doing a lot of chanting, but you don't want to leave the body. Yeah? Attention is always in the body. And that is why it's taking long time for us to make any progress in spiritual life. This is the reason. That attention is always on the body. And on the opposite side, you are chanting also. Thinking that chanting will sort out all my problems and I'll go back home, back to Godhead later after I chant for a lot of time. But your attention is still very much within the body. So more than sadhana, more than any meditation, even if you are meditating on something, oh, I have to do for an hour meditation today. After the hour meditation is over, straight away back into the body again to look after the body. How to organize my five course meals for three times a day or whatever that is inside. The planning starts from morning. What's for dinner and go and fight with the wife. Have you organized my dinner properly, lunch properly? Is everything on time? You want to make sure, isn't it? And then you look in the catalog for the clothes where you have to shop them. And all these things, one after the other for the body, arrangement starts from then on. So, Krishna's point is, and Vedanta, all the sages also, says this thing. If you are absorbed in all these things, don't read Bhagavad Gita. If this is the only business what we have got in life, maintaining this body. Body is there, it's temporarily come somehow. We'll come to that little later. If the body is there or not, that question comes later. When we talk about Janaka's state, Janaka Maharaj is called, you know the name Janaka, another name for him is Videha. Have you heard that word? Videha. In the Bhagavatam, the word comes. Why is he called Videha? Because as far as he is concerned, body doesn't exist for him. To such an extent, he was self-realized that even though while leaving the body, he says, I don't have a material body. To that sort of state he has reached. That's why Sudeva Goswami went to him to get instructed. Someone who says he doesn't have a material body while living within the material body. So that perfection he has come to. And we, where are we? We only know body. We don't know anything else except the body. So that's why Krishna is saying that spiritual knowledge to have some influence on us and spirituality to manifest in us, first thing we have to get out of this body, understanding of this body. And our attachment should come off from that. This is why Vairagyam, austerities, tapasya, jnanam, all these things helps you to come out of this ignorance from this bodily identity. So Shraddha, we are talking about Shraddha. Shraddha is more important than sadhana and Shraddha is more important than dhyanam, meditations. And Shraddha, when it moves from one point to another point, it's a jerk inside, isn't it? And to get the, avoid that jerk from happening is Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to stop that jerking from one thing to another. Arjuna got distressed, isn't it? What was the reason for that distress? Because he thought about something what he is not, isn't it? He thought that he is this body. And from that was the first jerk in him, in Arjuna's thoughts. I am this body. As soon as he thought he is the body, the next jerk, they are all my relatives. Next jerk. And then the next jerk, how can I fight with them? Raga, dvesham, all these things has developed. So one after the other, we are moving from our true identity as the soul and constantly moving away from the soul in different ways. And it is all a different jerks that's happening inside. So, and not only that, this is one ignorance in us. What is that? To identify ourselves with something, but actually we are not. This is the first thing. What is the second thing? Second thing is, the same thing, we do it with others also. Others also, they are soul. They are also not the body. But we put this cloth on them, they are also the body. So you can see how the changes happens inside. We lost our identity as the soul, and we lost others' identity also as the soul. So in other words, from the spiritual platform, when you fall, all these diversities develop within us. All the diversities develop within us. That is the reason that Krishna says to Arjuna, Arjuna, whether it is me or you, he says, that so long as you are in the bodily identity, nobody can stay eternally on that, on the bodily identity. Even about Krishna is saying this, Krishna himself is saying this, on a bodily identity, because Krishna is not on the bodily identity, all the time on the spiritual identity, Krishna can stay as long as he wants in that body, in that form. Whereas in a bodily identity, all of us, nobody, Krishna says, can live eternally in that, in a bodily identity. That it is never perfect. On a spiritual identity, we are all eternal. We are all eternal. And there is no reason to lament about anything, isn't it? On a spiritual identity, we are all eternal. So, body is imperfection. And whether it's my body or your body or somebody else's body, one day it will get destroyed. It will finish up. One way or the other, it will die. Therefore, what is the reason to feel distressed about it? First of all, the reason for the distress is this misunderstanding in a person. One person said, death itself is a disease. And we will find out some medicine whereby we can free ourselves from the death. Can you imagine the situation that if a medicine is invented whereby you can stop death? That is not, of course it's not possible, that's another thing. But imagine if you have found some remedy whereby you can stop death in this world. Body is another name for death. Body is another name for death. And the word I, which is the self, is another name for immortality. Immortality. When you are on the soul, if you call as I, that I is immortality. I is immortality. I words will be. And body is nothing but death. Body is meant for another name for death. If I say here, say like this, that I got my body, and anyone who says to you, I am happy in my life, in this body, what I am doing, it is like eating, saying that I am enjoying my hot ice cream. You see, when somebody says to you, ice cream, which is very hot, I am enjoying it. If a statement somebody makes like that, what is a stupid statement, isn't it? Ice cream is always cold. But if somebody is enjoying if you say like that, it means it's like a hot ice cream. Because in the material body, there's no question of being happy. There's no question of being happy. Sometimes people say like that, isn't it? I'm happy what I'm doing. I'm happy as I am. So there's nothing, why should I worry about anything else? Whatever you're telling me, I don't have to worry about it because I'm happy. I'm content, they will say like this. I'm content with what I'm doing. But contentment in bodily level has no meaning. Contentment in the bodily level has no meaning. Contentment released from the bodily identity, that is the very nature of the soul. That is called shanti. Shanti is actually contentment. But shanti in relationship with the soul is perfect, but not relationship with the body. If somebody says, I'm completely content within me, that's a false statement. Because he's on a bodily level. He is not content. He is still looking for bodily happiness. Only thing, by the moment when he is talking, he is not doing anything at that time. As soon as you go, he is again searching, his begging bowl starts again in action. So this is the basic foundation. This is the basic foundation what Krishna has spoken. So the first step, Vishadam came to Arjuna, and that is distress. Only when that distress is there, that people will understand spirituality, adhyatmikata. Spirituality is only understood when you experience this distress in life. Otherwise, people won't understand this. It's a very basic rule in spiritual life. That distress is what opens up that spiritual world to us. Distress in life. Otherwise, not. And at the moment, I've identified with my body, and I thought that others' body is also a reality. As really existent. And in other words, the ignorance in me, which already exists, I have imposed this ignorance on others also. Isn't it? On others also, I have imposed this ignorance, what is in me, that I am this body. I have imposed that on others as well. So Krishna showed this point, Krishna made Arjuna to understand as the first reason for his distress. For his distress, this was the first reason that you are Ashochyan Anyashochastvam Pratnyavadamscha Bhashase Gadasu Nagadasumscha Nani Shochandi Pandita. What does that verse mean? It means this, that you are an ignorant person, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, you're talking like a Pandita, but you're an ignorant person. Why? You identified with your body, first thing. That is your first ignorance. Then this same ignorance you have imposed on others as well, on other bodies as well. That is your next ignorance. So, imposing this ignorance on others, this was the reason, imposing the ignorance on you and imposing on others was the main reason for your distress. Krishna said that. Then, next thing Krishna said, in order to remove that distress from inside, what is the remedy? And remedy is that in true nature, to understand what your true nature is. So, in Yathartha Swarupam, that means true identity does not have birth, death and things like that. Doesn't exist for the soul. Because the Purna Vastu, the complete thing, does not go through any of these things. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. That is Purna Vastu. That is me. Actually, every one of us is that. Nityam, it is eternal. And Shuddham, it's pure. It cannot be contaminated with anything. Modes of nature cannot touch it. And also, it does not have any impact of the time, space, nothing. It is pure. And Buddha, it's always conscious. It is from that we are getting, I am always there existing, isn't it? I am consciousness. I, that consciousness come from that. Mukta Swarupa, it's always liberated. It's always in the liberated states. And it is not something to be achieved, acquired from outside. If it is something to be acquired from outside, or if it is going to take some time to get it, it cannot be. Why? Say, for example, today we die. Some of us die today. What will happen? Suppose I had a lot of desire to become liberated in this world. Extreme, intense desire to get liberated inside. But in order to get liberated, I have to execute a lot of sadhanas to get liberated. But before that I died. Does that mean that I cannot have it? No, Shastra doesn't say that. Shastra is saying, this is not something what has to come from outside. It's already there. And it is not something that has to come with sadhana or upasana also. We should never misunderstand that it is through my sadhana I got it. Or my upasana I got it. We don't get it like that. Upasana and sadhana is only to kill the false ego inside. If you keep on doing sadhana in life, at a certain point in time, you will realize it, that your effort is all useless. You will come to that understanding. All the great upasakas, or who have performed upasana, have acknowledged this point, that it is not possible by my effort to get that thing. When does that thing comes then? When due to sadhana, when your own false ego comes down. That false ego is a very difficult thing to get out, isn't it? So it is so subtle inside, that thing, false ego. So eventually the false ego will collapse one day when you feel helpless. After whole life of sadhana in the deathbed, you will start thinking, I didn't get it. Whole life I chanted the holy name, I didn't get it. And still, I'm not feeling any spiritual satisfaction. It is then that Krishna's mercy comes. So, the surrender or sharanagati, what we referred in bhakti process, is nothing but this realization ultimately that I am helpless in this. That helplessness, state of helplessness, has to come. One day or the other it will come. If one has worked for it very hard, and if you didn't make it, whole life I spent on this, nothing has happened to me. So, everyone will think like that, and eventually that realization will drive us into this understanding that only I have option one left now, let Krishna do what he wants with me. That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, isn't it? Ashlishyava padaradam pinashtumam adarshanam marmahatam karotuva yatha tathava vidadhadulampato matprana nathastuna evana para. Whether you appear in front of me or you kick me out from here, embrace me or you put me under your feet and give me all sorts of insults, you don't appear in front of adarshanam marmahatam karotuva. No matter whatever you did, it is that state what we are talking about. Still, you are my Krishna. Krishna is my Lord. That approach to Krishna, it is then that Krishna's heart starts melting, that this person has come to this understanding. In other words, that surrender doesn't happen very easily. At the moment, our is all business. We want to do business with Krishna. We are doing this for you, what you are doing for me? This way, it goes on. So, in pure state of consciousness, pure bhakti is that state. This Mahaprabhu's last words in the Shishtashtagam. Ashlishiva padaradam pinishtumam adarshanam marmahadam karyodhuva yatha tadava vitadadu lambado matprana nathastuna evana para. You are my only Lord, nobody else. And I have no other shelter except you. So it's not easy to reach that state of surrender, but that is the perfection inside. That's the perfection inside. So what I was saying this was that if it is dependent on time, that means upasana or sadhana means dependent on the time, isn't it? That I will chant for say 25 years or 30 years, 16 rounds a day, and at the end I will get it. So in other words, if it is dependent on the time, I can't get it because there is no guarantee I will live tomorrow. I could be dead and gone. That means I can't realize the self in this possible, in this lifetime. Only if I have a lifespan of 80 years, I can realize the self. That also doesn't look logical, isn't it? If that is the case, Krishna would have given all of us 80 years lifespan. But sometimes we die much earlier. Today I came to know about spiritual life from Bhagavad Gita. I came to know about the soul. Tomorrow I am dying. I died. So that means what I've heard from Bhagavad Gita is of no use to me. No, that's not right. What Krishna is pointing out is this. The moment you accept this, what Krishna has said to us, the moment you have accepted, the problem is solved. Only thing what we have not done is we have not accepted it still. That's where the problem is. If you have accepted what Krishna has said completely and you are able to understand it and completely accept yourself without any questioning anymore further, you are liberated. There's no more liberation going to happen after that. And if you die tomorrow, you die in a liberated state. You leave the body. So, upasana or a long period of time, lifespan, all these things have no connection with self-realization. It's no connection with self-realization. Because our nature, because of our conditioned mind, in material life, we make plans, isn't it? A certain goal we set, and we think that it requires 6 months or 1 year, just like education. 10 years at school, 5 years at uni, and then you come out, you have a degree, and then you will get a job. In this way, the mind is conditioned all the time to think in that way, isn't it? That doesn't apply to spiritual life. That doesn't apply to spiritual life. Spiritual life, we mentioned before, is right now, here, now. Not tomorrow, not yesterday. Now, here. How much we accept what Krishna has said. The moment you have absorbed this knowledge inside, spiritual life is perfect. Spiritual life goes on well. So therefore, instead of leaving it for old age, and instead of leaving it for a long period of sadhana, to that to mature, Krishna is saying to us, right now, when you hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, accept it as it is, without any doubt about it. The doubts has to go from inside. A perfect example that when Parikshit Maharaj sat down, that nobody told him, oh, first you practice pranayama and get it sorted first, all your bodily state. Pranayama controls the mind, the body and everything. Isn't it? Pranayama is one of the finest art for controlling the breath inside. Or nobody told him, you perform your sandhyavandanam, what you should do, and execute that for a certain period of time. But Sudeva Goswami told him, how much time have you got? He said. So the curse, according to Parishad, was not so old. And the curse was such that you got 7 days time left. That's what he was told. Isn't it? 7 days time, you got it. And if you look at Parishad, Sukadeva Goswami's reply, it's more than enough, he says. Look at that confidence in it. Why? Because Sukadeva Goswami knows that self-realization doesn't require much time. It's not dependent on the time. Self-realization is not dependent on the time. If I can get Parishad back to his self-identity, what he is actually, that's all the problem is, isn't it? So he says to him, oh, you got 7 days and that's more than enough, he says. You got 7 days time, that's more than enough. 7 days time is there, that's more than enough, he says. In other words, why he's saying like that? Because that to hear Bhagavadam, what he has, he says in whatever he can, Sudeva Goswami could have spoken a lot more, but he wanted to, he had to limit within 7 days time. Because he knew 7 days time is there, so in 7 days time, that's more than enough to get the truth across to the other person, to Parishad. That is the reason why he said that. Sukadeva Goswami said 7 days is more than enough. And our when the death is standing in front of us, to for us to leave the body, how to reach that perfection? How to reach that perfection? In the Upanishads, this statement is very clear. It says here, Iha cheda vedi adasatyam asti, na chediha vedi mahadi vinashti. It's a beautiful statement. It is coming from the Kaino Upanishad. Kaino Upanishad makes this statement. Iha cheda vedi adasatyam asti. Truth, you have to capture it right now. You should not think about it, oh, I will look at Bhagavad Gita 20 years from now and then I'll keep on reading the verses. No. Truth is there. You have to take it straight away. Iha cheda vedi adha satyam asti. Satyam is right now in the Bhagavad Gita. How you take it from Bhagavad Gita? Na chediha vedi mahadi vinashti. If you don't take it now from Bhagavad Gita, mahadi vinashti, it may never happen again. It will be a great loss in life. So in other words, Krishna wants us to, this knowledge, to be used all the time in life, at every moment, in our daily life, without waiting for this, oh, I will perfect myself, let me be sorted out with after all my family responsibilities and all our other commitments in life and all this. This is our normal tendency in us, isn't it? To wait, let it take its own time. What's the rush? What's the urgency? What's the urgency? Parents will also tell you the same thing. You should now get married, have properly living, come comfortably in life. And all these things, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, after you have retired, you can take it. And then start reading it. Kathopanishad says, no. Iha cheda vedi, he cheda vedi adha satyam asti. Na chediha vedi mahadi vinashti. If you have not taken it now, you have lost it. Because there is nobody, nobody may tell you tomorrow about these things. You may not get the inspiration to read this. Your mind may not go in that direction. Mahadi vinashti, it's a loss then. Everything is lost after that. So in spiritual life, every moment we have to stay in this path. In spiritual life, whatever we understood from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, that should be the energy source inside, in our life. At no point in time you can leave it behind and say, let me finish all my other work and come back to this at a later date. That's not the purpose behind it. Iha cheda vedi mahadi vinashti. Iha cheda vedi adha satyam asti. Na chediha vedi mahadi vinashti. If you have not done that, you have lost it. Kaino Upanishad says, you have lost it. So, right now, if you get it here, right now, you can escape from this. If not, otherwise, if it is something which is going to happen much later, you are going to get it. Mahadi vinashti. Upanishad says, Mahadi vinashti. Big loss. It is like this, they say. Just like the hands, this thing. Similarly, you have to catch it straight away. Immediately. After going home, I'll think about it, and then I'll catch it. You should not even wait for that. You should not even wait for that. Sometimes we do like that, isn't it? We hear everything. Let me go back and think about it, we'll say. And then I'll see what we can do. That we have to do. That is mananam, that's a different thing. But right now, when it is spoken from Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says something, it should be gone in. Straight away, it should take its effect on us. This is the purpose of a spiritual master. A spiritual master, when he is constantly discussing about the soul with the disciple should not wait and make notes and make everything and write it down. And then say, I've noted everything. Let me think about it afterwards. This is our normal approach, isn't it? In college and university, that's what we do. What do we do? When the lecturer is lecturing, we make notes. And then we... then nowadays, the system is a little different. Nowadays, they have got this system where whatever he is speaking, you can get it immediately when you leave the class in a CD. Whatever he has spoken. So, you don't... Some people even don't go to the classes. They don't even go to the classes. Why? Because it's available on a CD. I can take it home at my own time, relaxed mood, in my room, in the hostel, lodge, hostel, wherever. I can listen to it. No. Spiritual life is not like that. When you hear, it says there, when you hear, you have to catch it straight away. If not to be kept for another day, to hear... That is only to strengthen what you have already got it. In order to strengthen that, you can do all that. To get your... If you are slipping away from that realization, if you are slipping away, in order not to slip away, you can use it to support that. But when the truth is spoken, truth should get accepted inside straight away. So the example is like this. That there is a book called Vedanta Kesari. In there it says here, there is a thing called Chindamani. Chindamani is a touchstone, isn't it? With that touchstone, if you touch anything, it will turn it into gold. It turns it into gold, yes. So some jnanis compare the spiritual master as to a touchstone, who can touch anything and turns into gold. But the spiritual master is more than a touchstone. It's more than a touchstone. Why is it like that? The spiritual master, Chindamani, when he touches something, he turns it into gold. But spiritual master, if he has touched the disciple properly, disciple in quality and in realizations becomes as good as the spiritual master of the realization of the soul. So he becomes another Chindamani, in other words. So they come to the same state of consciousness. And in other words, he brings him into the same state of realizations. And such a person is called in the Upanishads as Brahmanishtam. If you remember, there is a definition of the spiritual master where it's mentioned that Shamilpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. This Brahmanishtam state is that. By coming into association with him and accepted as a disciple, that spiritual master is able to bring the disciple to the same state of consciousness as the spiritual master is. That's called Brahmanishta. Brahmanishta, because he is situated in that platform, he should be able to deliver you, to bring you to the same platform. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam also says, Guru comes and instructs, and... that there is not even the slightest difference. Why is it said like that? Why? Reason is this. If the spiritual master is soul, if I am also soul, where should be the difference? There should be no difference. Isn't it? So long as sometimes spiritual master is in the perfectly situated as the spiritual platform, as soul. Disciple is in the bodily platform. And that is the reason. If spiritual master is seeing the disciple as a body, he is not anymore a spiritual master. The spiritual master is realized only if he is seeing the disciple also on the spiritual platform. Disciple can see the spiritual master on a bodily level because he has not elevated himself. He has not elevated himself. He is still on a bodily understanding. But spiritual master cannot see the disciple on a bodily level. If he is seeing him on a bodily level, there is already this misunderstanding in him that he himself is not realized. Isn't it? If he has come to realize that Aham Brahmasmi state, if he has reached the bodily, the spiritual realization of the truth, Aham Brahmasmi state, if he has reached, he should not see anyone in this world on a bodily level. On a bodily level. So therefore, this is a very... very stringent test on a spiritual master. that if a spiritual master is seeing other living entities on a bodily level, then he is not a spiritual master anymore. And that is the test for that person. That he has not only Brahmanishta. Shamilpani, Shrotriyam, Brahmanishtam. Shrotriyam, Brahmanishtam are the two words. Shrotriyam means he has heard properly enough that he is fixed up in that state. He is not fallen from that Brahmanishtam stage. So, so that is why we have to say that the spiritual master who says that the I will talk to you about the truth later when you are ready for it, if he is saying like that, he is not a spiritual master. If somebody says to you that, well, you chant for so many years and then I will talk to you when you are ready, I'll give you the instructions properly, that means he's not, the person who is giving that also is not understood the truth behind it. That Sadguru, he is referred to as Sadguru, and he is able to deliver it to him right now. And Purnada, that perfection, is, that's what Arjuna is saying to, Krishna is saying to Arjuna now, that the cause for this Vishadam, there's only one disease, that's this ignorance, and there is only one remedy, is to know your real nature. Our disease is that we don't know our identity. Isn't it? That's only one disease we have got now. We give so many diseases, all for the body. But the real disease what we have got is that we don't know what we are. If you look into Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will see. When Sanatana Goswami met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what did he say first thing? He says to Mahaprabhu, I don't know what I am. I don't know who I am, he says. You know that? If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will see this. Sanatana Goswami didn't mention to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I have this problem, that problem, nothing. I have only one problem. I don't know what I am, he says. This is the question which should come to everyone who comes to spiritual life first. I don't know what I am. So long as we don't have, now we are thinking, we know what, I know who I am, you don't have to tell me. This is our attitude. But that is not the state. The spiritual inquiry is on a much subtle level, extremely subtle level. I don't know what I am. This is our problem in life. And this is the only disease we have got. And the only remedy for that is to realize the self. You take Chaitanya Charitamrita, or I think in teachings of Lord Chaitanya also you will see this, that this is the problem we have got. This is the only problem we have in this life. I don't know what I am. Yeah. So Sanatana Goswami, when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is the first question he posed in front of Mahaprabhu. I don't know what I am. So what is there to discuss anymore? This is my problem. I've come to you, instruct me what I should do. I don't know what I am. People say I am a scholar. People say I am this, I am that, I am a big minister, I was wealthy, I was learned, I was this, I was that, all kinds of things, Mahaprabhu says. But that's all useless because I don't know what I am. What's the point in talking about all these kind of things? He says to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu says to Sanatana Goswami, now you are, sit down there, I'll talk to you, he says. And then the instruction starts. Long instructions to Sanatana Goswami from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins at that time. So you can see in spiritual life, all these things, there's only one disease, that is this ignorance of who I am, and there's only one remedy, to know your real nature. So ajnanam, or ignorance, is the only disease, and the only medicines for that is the knowledge of the self. There's nothing else. We make it so complicated, thinking that I have to know many other things, I have to know all the shastram, I have to go through Vedantam, everything. But in a simplified terms, if you put it, this is all it is. The problem and the solution. And this is pointed out to us first. And we see that Arjuna, in throughout Bhagavad Gita, you can see Arjuna is realizing this. Initially, Krishna made Arjuna to understand this point. Arjuna, Atma has no birth, it has neither death. You are soul. And whom are you worrying about? Whom are you feeling distressed about? And first you get rid of this distress, and the truth was spoken to Arjuna. And situated in the state of knowledge, situated in the state of knowledge, And that this misunderstanding which was in Arjuna, Krishna has spoken about the spiritual knowledge. There is no need to execute anything or to do anything in this world. Because once you come to Vyavaharam means to this worldly activities, what we do, that you will lose this knowledge. You will lose this knowledge. Once you come to Vyavaharam, you will lose this knowledge. That's what happens to all of us, isn't it? We accept this knowledge when we hear, but as soon as we go and we start doing our worldly transactions, this knowledge is gone. Where has it gone? That question comes, isn't it? And we ourselves, later on, when we start and think about it, that I've heard so much from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, but every time I lose it, when it is necessary. So, here it is where we have to go back to King Janaka's story. King Janaka's story is the most interesting story which talks about this. That when it comes to Vyavaharam, we are not able to take this as the truth. We are taking something else as the truth at that time, isn't it? In transactions in the world, when we lose this knowledge, what happens? We accept something else as the truth and start dealing in a different way. A great personality, a sadhu or a sannyasi, went to see King Janaka. Janaka was a great jnani, a realized soul. And in order to get instructions from Janaka, many sannyasis used to come. And Janaka was a householder. That is more interesting. He was a householder and all the sannyasis were coming to him to receive instructions from him. Because they knew that he was a realized person, a realized soul. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi himself sent Sukadeva Goswami to Janaka. That you should read in the Mahabharatam and also in Skanda Puranam it says how Vedavyasa Maharshi asking Sukadeva Goswami to go and see Janaka, and Sukadeva Goswami traveling over the Himalayas and mountains and walking through the lands, different lands, and coming to meet King Janaka. And when he came to see King Janaka, Janaka was in the palace. So this Janaka was a perfect example of Sthita Prajnato. Remember that word, Sthita Prajnato? Sthita Prajna Sega Bhasha Samadhista Se Keshava. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? So he was a Sthita Prajna. Janaka Maharaj was a Sthita Prajna. So many, many people, great personalities, used to come and see him. So he was a king at the same time, administering the whole kingdom. And he was executing a lot of things. He was doing a lot of things. And because he was known also Videha, by name Videha, I am not this body, that is not the state what he was. I am not this body, that's not the state he was. We used to say, I am not this body is not mine, this body is not meant for me. This is what normally we say, isn't it? I am not this body, body is not mine. Because when you study Bhagavad Gita, all the devotees also say like this, isn't it? I am not this body. That's what we say. And we do all our transactions with this understanding. But Janaka Maharaj's understanding was, not that I am not this body, he says, I don't even have a body, he says. So it's a little higher than this, isn't it? When you say I am not this body, at least you recognize there's a thing called body existing. Only thing what you are saying is, I am not this body. But King Janaka is saying, he's not saying I am not this body, he says I have no body. Which means that not only he recognizes he is not this body, he says the existence of the very body itself, he is gone out of it, from the existence of the body itself. So people used to ask him, how you are conducting yourself in this body, all these kind of things. He says, that if only if I have a body, he says that I got some dealings. That was his answer. Just imagine that. Think about these things a little deeper. That he's saying, only if I think I have a body, if I am aware of body existing, only then I have to think that I am doing some transactions in this world. Imagine the realization in that person. Janaka Maharaj's realization is such that he didn't even think all these transactions, what he was doing as a king, means loads of transactions, isn't it? Every moment making decisions, receiving people, and administrations, all kinds of things, dealing with ministers, so many things. So as far as Janaka Maharaj is saying, none of this existed because he didn't have a body. So he has gone a little bit more than the ordinary person's level. So they have a state where body didn't exist for him. And while being a king and the body is doing all these transactions, sometimes you have to punish people also, isn't it? As a king, you have to give punishments to people also. Or sometimes in his own assembly, he has to recognize the qualifications of the scholars and great personalities like that. He has to do all that. So he is always in the court, king's court, where he has to do various things. And people are seeing all these things. And how could they call him Videha? How come he says he has no body? So it was a very interesting question came up. People are calling him Videha, one who has no material body. In other words, he has never accepted he has a body. On the other hand, he is running a whole kingdom and running a palace with all its members assembled there. And he sometimes he is giving recognition awards to some scholars and glorifying them. Sometimes he is giving punishment to criminals and punishing them. And various things he is doing, his administration, everything. In spite of this, he says he has no body. So this sannyasi who came there, he asked King Janaka that, how are you able to do this, like this? How you are able to do like this? He says to him that right in the middle of all these things, completely unaffected by any of these things, how you are able to be situated like this? Janakan says to this sannyasi, who told you that I am sitting in the middle of so many people? What do you answer then? What can you answer to him? He says, you are telling me that I am sitting in the middle of all these people. But who told you that, he says, that I am sitting in the middle of all these people? I am sitting in the, right in the middle of a big forest, he says. Big forest. Ahojane samohebi nadvaidam pashyato mama. This is his Janaka Maharaj's words. Aho jana samohebi nadvaidam pashyato mama. That right even in the middle of all these people, my thoughts have not wavered a little bit from that spiritual reality. So that is a very... Now you can imagine why everybody was going to him for instructions. This is not making fun of anybody. This is a very serious business. This is what's being spoken. Aho janam samohebi nadvaidam pashyato mama. I am not seeing anything in this world except that truth. So, to such a person, although he is a householder, he is a king. You can imagine, you cannot get more entangled than this in this world, isn't it? Householder means entanglement, and plus a king. You can imagine. There is no time for anything else. In the middle of that, King Janaka is the most realized personality. Sudev Goswami had to go to him for spiritual instructions. And this particular sannyasi went to see him, is asking this question to him, and his reply was this, that who told you that I am sitting in the middle of so many people? So if you have a king like this, it will be very difficult to do transactions with him, isn't it? But anyway, in the middle of all that, everything what he is seeing is the spiritual nature, only the soul. And for me, no second thing exists except the soul. This is the reply from Janaka. No second thing exists. The peace what you experience when you are sitting in the middle of a forest, because in the middle of a forest you are not disturbed by any of the other material activities, isn't it? So you feel a different kind of peace inside the forest where the sages went for their peaceful life. So the same way he says here that peace I am experiencing in the middle of all these people. It is up to this Janaka, the sannyasi has gone to him. And this sannyasi was not an ordinary person. He was already a very elevated soul. So therefore, when he came to the palace, Janaka told him to stay inside in his castle or in the palace for some time. But Janaka didn't give any attention to him when he came. The first time when he came, Janaka knew for what purpose he had come. Because he is such an elevated person, this is what happens. He'll know everything in everyone's mind. So as soon as this sannyasi came, he knew for what purpose he had come. And he didn't give any attention to him for a few days. A lot of activities were going on in the palace. Many times Janaka came out of the palace, went inside the palace, and never he looked at the sannyasi once. Not once he looked at him. And when the sannyasi arrived here, he informed the guards there that I come to see the king. The sannyasi mentioned this. And they have informed the king as well, but the king didn't give any attention. Janaka never gave any attention to him. Few days have gone, and after a few days, one day Janaka came out and told him to come with him, to go inside. He told the sannyasi. So few days he had to wait. And Janaka is observing what level is it, at his, what has to be spoken to him. So he says, when Janaka took him inside, all the royal reception for him after 2 days. After 2 days he completely ignored him. And then he gave him a royal reception to take him inside the palace. To go inside the palace. So when he, and after taking him inside, first thing Janaka Maharaj did was, he is a sannyasi, Janaka Maharaj is a householder kshatriya. So kshatriya has to pay his respects to the sannyasi. So he pays his obeisances to him. 2 days he has not even looked at him, and then he is paying his obeisances to him. So, and then there is a system that when a kshatriya receives a sannyasi like that, the kings particularly, there is a system that you give them a spoon, and in the spoon you fill it with oil. Fill it with oil. Some good quality oil. Not some cheap oil, but some not sunflower oil, definitely not. Some good quality oil. You fill the spoon with the oil and told him to take the spoon into his mouth, and told sannyasi to hold it in his hand. And Janaka was walking and told sannyasi to follow him with the spoon in the hand. And while Janaka was going inside to his palace, right inside, he has to walk through so many other things, because palace means big palace. A lot of things goes on there. So somewhere there's dance going on, some women were dancing, music was going on. So Janaka Maharaj stood there and looked at them and enjoyed all that. Music, everything, dance, everything. Sannyasi was standing there with the spoon and the oil in the hand. Careful not the oil to spill. So he's standing there. Sannyasi is walking behind him. And after a while, what he saw was, in another room, there was somewhere a lot of sweets have been kept. All kinds of sweets and savories, everything there. So Janaka Maharaj goes there and takes some sweets and start tasting it. Never offered anything to the sannyasi. Sannyasi is holding the spoon still with the oil in the spoon. He's standing there. Then, after that, Janaka ate some sweets. And sannyasi never was consulted anything about it. He kept moving. Afterwards, he reached another treasury of the treasury department in the king's palace. And there were all jewelries were exhibited there. All the gold stock of the palace was shown there in different forms. So Janaka Maharaj goes there and picks up everything, looks at it, some of them. And never discussed anything with this sannyasi. Sannyasi was still busy with the spoon and the oil in the hand. So... And after getting inside, after seeing so many different scenes like this, they got inside the palace. When they got inside, he paid his obeisances to the sannyasi and asked the sannyasi, why have you come here? Do you want to know anything from me? He says to the sannyasi. So the sannyasi says to him, my dear king, you are a jnani, you are a realized soul. Instead of you paying your obeisances to me, I should be paying my obeisances to you, he says. But according to Varnashrama Dharma, it's the other way, isn't it? Because of that, you are paying your obeisances to me, the sannyasi says. But strictly speaking, I should be paying my obeisances to you. But on the other hand, you are following the Varnashrama Dharma. That's why you are paying your obeisances. Because only on that basis, a sannyasi, a householder has to pay the obeisances to a sannyasi. Based on Varnashrama Dharma, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, on that basis. Brahmachari, Grahastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam. So he says here, I've come to ask you this question. What is the secret of sthita prajñatvam? What is the secret of this? And in the middle of all these things, what's going on in this world, in the middle of all these things, what is going on in this world, how are you able to maintain this sthita prajñatvam inside yoga sthiti without losing it? How you are able to maintain it without losing this state of sthita prajna. We have to understand sthita prajna very important, because it is this sthita prajnatvam is the main topic in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. is sthitapragnatvam. And sthitapragnatvam has got a lot of aspects to it, different aspects to it. Through this, it is to be understood through examples only. In Vedantam, it is through examples you understand this. So, sthitapragnatvam was discussed like this. Through this particular activity, what has happened now is that he says to him, that what is the secret? So, how do you maintain this? Janaka Maharaj says, you have come behind me, did you not? He said, when I walked from the palace outside, you coming behind me. Did you see the women dancing there, when singing and dancing? Sannyasi says, no, I didn't notice that, he says. Did you see all the sweets I have eaten? He says, no, I have not seen, because I was busy with the oil and the spoon. And did you see the jewelry, what I picked up from there? He says, no. Said, because you didn't see any of those things, because you didn't see any of those things, not a drop of oil has gone away from the spoon. The spoon was carrying the whole oil what I've given it to you. What I've given it to you. In other words, whatever things that gives you distraction in this world, vichevam, it's called vichevam, isn't it? What creates vichevam inside, without giving any attention to it, all the time if you have to stay fixed within the soul, that the energy you have inside, you won't lose it. That means that if your attention is always on the soul, that you won't lose any energy because you have not given your attention to anything else in this world. The soul will continuously supply you the energy to do like that. But he says here, after seeing all these things, even after not a drop of oil has gone from inside, from the spoon, it is only to point out to you that you were able to do that only because your attention was only on the soul. That is why in your action not a drop has fallen away from the spoon. The reason was that, he says. Then he says to him, now you'll fill it with this oil again, once again in the spoon. And he filled this oil again into the spoon and told him, go alone, see everything and come back. He says to him to go and see everything and come back what you have not seen. Wherever you have, I have been taken you before, now you go on your own, see everything and come back. So he went with the spoon, and now this time he has gone and had a looked at the dancing that was going on, the music, and then all the sweet shops where the sweets are kept, and all the jewelry what the king has mentioned to him. And he said, when he came back, most of the oil has gone from the spoon. Most of the oil has gone from the spoon. There was no oil in the spoon. So Janaka says to him, you have to see everything in this world, and not a drop of oil should go from the spoon. And this is called sthitapragnatvam. This is called sthitapragnatvam. Sthitapragnatvam means you have to do everything in this world, but not a drop of oil should lose from the spoon. That is how King Janaka taught him this thing. And and without losing any oil, always fixed on the soul, all the time. This is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Nirvikalpa means this. That in the other things, all the Mahatmas also, when they come to this state, sometimes they will lose that. They will lose that state. Sometimes they will lose that state. They may not have reached that perfect state like this. They can focus on this, but not give attention to anything in this world. That is, most of the people can do that. Great souls. Even to reach that is difficult. We are not even getting there. We are, if we can get 1 second there, we consider it as a success, isn't it? But the many Mahatmas in this world, they can do that. They can be always focused, great yogis and all, they can be focused on the soul. But when you come to transactions in this world, this is why they go to Himalayas. They don't want transactions in this world. So they run away. Because they have not reached that state, they can do both at the same time, like Janaka could do. So they went to the Himalayas to stay away from all transactions, but try to focus on the soul as much as possible. They can reach that state of consciousness. So here, Janaka is saying to him that Sthitapragna is that person who can do everything in this world, but without losing a drop of oil from the spoon. In other words, otherwise when you come to Vyavaharam, transactions, everything will go. Those who have not become Sthitapragnatam in yoga system will not be able to maintain this peace. Will not be able to, he will have peace inside. While thinking about the soul, he will have the peace. In satsangam, he will have the peace inside. But as soon as you come to Vyavaharam, he will lose his peace. He will lose his peace. The oil will go away. So when the Shraddha is inside, when the Shraddha goes outside, the attention will lose on the soul. Attention will lose on the soul. Vidyaranya Swamiji says this in the book also about this. He says, you know, you might have known, everybody knows these things. You know, in many places, there is women dance with water pots on their head. They can dance and the pot won't fall from the head. You've seen that, isn't it? You see in some folk dances and all, they do that. That they balance it so nicely that this is balanced well, and they do all kinds of bodily movements dance while dancing. You have seen that? It is there in many, many places. Yeah. So how do they do that? Although they are doing everything on the body, on bodily, this is an example just to bring it to understand. With the body they are doing all these things, but their also attention is on the pot, on the head. That if it doesn't fall, it stays there, even while doing all these kind of things. So it is a similar situation for a Sthitapragnatam. Sthitapragnatam is that everything is done, but but inside is constantly conscious of the whatever he may do, he won't allow the peace inside to get disturbed. The Purna Shanti, a complete peace inside, and he's always conscious how to protect that peace inside himself. So Sthitapragnatam is this. Arjuna asked the question, Sthitapragnasya ga bhasha samadhisthasya keshava. Arjuna is saying to Krishna, what is the symptom of a Sthitapragna? That how does he act? How does he walk? How does he sleep? All kinds of things. Krishna is saying that Sthitapragna is like this. And the perfect example, the very perfect example is Krishna. Isn't it? Perfect example is Krishna. Sthitapragnatam. Perfect example in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam is Krishna himself. There's no one more perfect than Krishna. The activities Krishna was involved in this world is unbelievable. Listen, if you think about Krishna's life from beginning to in this world, from appearance to 125 years at the end of disappearance, all what Krishna has done, nobody was more active than Krishna in the world than Krishna himself. We all, after some time, we get tired and we give up. But Krishna never gave up at any point, if you look at it. After Vrindavana pastimes, Mathura pastimes, Dwaraka pastimes, not enough in three places, then goes back to Hastinapur, get involved with the Pandavas, and then the Mahabharata war in Kurukshetram. So everything, Krishna got involved in everything 100%. But what happened? At the end, no movement for the mind or any disturbances inside. This is what that Janaka Maharaj is talking about, that Sthitapragnatam. And this is that Sthitapragnatam is the goal in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, if you come to a Sthitapragna, you are liberated. There is nothing else after that. So how to protect that peace inside, not allow that to get disturbed. That one side we are talking about death, on the other side we are talking about immortality, amrutam. So how to become conscious of that immortality? Not the moment we are conscious of death, isn't it? That's what we are conscious of death. We are conscious of death very much now. Why? It's related to the body. But when the same consciousness becomes strong in relationship with the immortality of the soul, that is Sthitapragnatam. You can see where we are missing the point. We are now in the bodily identity, very conscious of the death of this body. But if the same attention moves on to the soul and we become conscious of that immortality of the soul, you are a Sthitapragnatam, has come. Sthitapragnatam has come. Same time, in one person, both death and immortality is existing. both death and immortality is existing in the same person at the same time. And Sthita Prajnatvam is presented in the Bhagavad Gita like this. He is called as a Bhakta, he is called as Gunatida, he is called as Dvandadida, he is called a Yogi. Only difference in the names. Only the difference is in the names. But symptoms are exactly the same. Arjuna had this doubt when he heard all these things, when he heard about the soul, Atmavidya, when Krishna instructed first time, Arjuna was asking, is this all practical? Isn't it? Arjuna's question was, is it all practical? If it is not practical, what is the use of knowing all these things? Isn't it? That's also there. Suppose Krishna says something and it's not practical. We say, oh, it's not practical. Then why do Krishna talk all these things? It's a waste of time, isn't it? It has to be practical. Otherwise, it's no point in talking about all these things. And there was no need for all the acharyas to take Bhagavad Gita and give the commentaries on that. If it was not practical, they would have said, it's not practical anyway, so throw it away. What's the point in discussing it? But it doesn't look like that. It looks that for generation after generation, people are taking Bhagavad Gita and discussing it. Why? The reason is it is practical. Only thing, we have not put effort into it to make it practical in that way. So, Krishna says here, according to Vyavaharam means the discussions, transactions in this world, that Vedic philosophy is saying that the Nitya Jivitam, daily life is important. Daily life is important. Nitya Karmam is important. Daily what we are doing is important. So, many days if you join together, that is known as life, isn't it? So, whatever, if it has to come to my use or benefit on my daily life, this knowledge, it's not something for death, to be kept for death. In my daily life, it has to be of use to me. And that is what Krishna will discuss later about it. We'll see tomorrow. On glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada.